Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Barbara Lichman for petitioners. As a threshold matter, I want to discuss...
Better start from the threshold.
You're absolutely right.
Threshold questions are pretty troubling for you. Do you have standing?
Yes, Your Honor, we have standing. If you will note in our standing declarations, if you wish to talk about the governmental entities first, because there are a plethora of petitioners, so we can start with the governmental entities.
Who has harm that's caused by the action you're suing against that is remediable in the cause at issue?
The governmental entities. Here's the harm. We have pled that the governmental entities are responsible for enforcing the environmental laws and supporting the environmental, reporting the environmental impacts and mitigating them in their land use decisions. In the declaration of Delaware County's Andrew Riley, we stated specifically the Pennsylvania law that requires it.
What's the relief you seek here in this case?
We seek two things. One, that at least that this be remanded for that the presumed to conform rule issued by the FAA.
Now, how has the presumed to conform rule caused harm to anyone who is a petitioner in this action?
First of all, the presumed to conform rule, the minute it was promulgated, caused the governmental entities to have to adjust their actions with respect to anticipating environmental impacts and specifically air quality impacts.
The specific harm that was caused by this rule when it came into effect that is remediable in this action?
The governmental entities could not anticipate compliance with their state implementation plans. They are charged by Pennsylvania and Nevada law.
The best you have on harm to them is that they could not anticipate compliance with their SIPs.
Well, under Olmsted Falls, it's a harm to the governmental entity, qua governmental entity. That's their harm. That's their responsibility under the law. And if they can't meet that responsibility.
Back the presumed conform rule. How are the states any better off than they were the day before we heard this case?
Because they can now know what the air quality impacts of the various categories specified in the presumed to conform rule will be. As it stands now, those impacts, once decided to be conforming, will forever be conforming. And this court has decided on numerous occasions that the Clean Air Act requires sites.
There's something that's not conforming now that would be conforming if the rule, the presumed to conform rule, were not out there.
Air traffic control procedures, potentially. We don't know.
Potentially. We don't sit to hear potential cases. And at the time that the particular plans that are even referenced in your brief were promulgated, this rule was not final yet. Is that not correct? The Nevada and Pennsylvania?
No, sir. It is not correct.
It's not?
No. The presumed to conform rule draft was issued February 27, 2007.
Yes.
Correct? The presumed to conform rule final publication in the Federal Register was July 30th, 2007. Mm-hmm. The final environmental impact statement for the airspace redesign was issued August 3rd, 2007, and the ROD was not issued until September 5th, 2007.
You're talking about Philadelphia
now? Talking about Philadelphia.
So is there any reference in either of those to the final presumed to conform rule?
Yes. In the ROD for the airspace redesign, Philadelphia, the ROD says specifically that this ROD is based on exemptions and presumptions from conformity.
But does it cite the final rule?
No, but the only way you could get a presumption would be through the final rule.
Well, there was the draft, and it refers to the EIS, doesn't it?
You mean the ROD?
And the final rule was employed in Philadelphia, right?
No, sir.
Only in Las Vegas?
That's correct, sir.
I see.
So the harm and...
Wait.
I'm sorry.
The FAA didn't rely on the draft in the... in Philadelphia, it didn't rely on the draft of the new rule?
It's mentioned in the EIS that they were promulgating a rule.
They hadn't promulgated yet.
They had. Even though the draft, the rule, the final rule, presumed to conform rule that's at issue here, was published July 30th. The FEIS to which you refer was actually noticed for publication August 3rd, 4 days after the presumed to conform rule was finally published.
Maybe, but did they refer to a final published rule, or did they refer to something that they were promulgating?
There was something that they were promulgating.
So the FAA takes the position that it was the draft of the new rule, and you're just saying, and that's not correct?
I didn't see the FAA's position that way. The FAA's position is that a rule needs to be applied, and this one hasn't been, but the fact of the matter is that it was applied in the ROD case for the East Coast airspace redesign, in the ROD for the East Coast airspace redesign, because that ROD relied specifically on exemptions and presumptions. The only way a presumption can develop is if it is in a rule that creates such presumptions under the Clean Air Act.
In the Philadelphia redesign, didn't the FAA also rely on the finding that there was a de minimis environmental impact?
Yes, Your Honor.
That wouldn't change if we struck the entire presumed conform rule, would it?
Yes, it would, because part of their presumption, I shouldn't use the word presumption so liberally, part of their determination of the de minimis status of the project was based on their presumption. Part of it was purported to be based on a fuel burn analysis.
Mm-hmm. Which showed that it would decrease emissions. Mm-hmm.
That is under litigation, separately and distinctly.
That I understand. Fine, I can see why you have standing in that litigation, but I'm not sure why you do here.
Your rules for standing require that we show in a procedural case, as this is, the government doesn't dispute this, that the petitioners show that a federal action has caused a distinct risk of particularized injury. It doesn't say that that risk must be imminent or even redressable.
Judge Santel and I are focusing on the redressability point.
Yeah.
The fact is, if an agency clearly has two grounds on which it rested its decision, alternative grounds, and one of them is invalid, you'd still uphold the agency because the other ground is valid and supports the decision. And that seems to us, or I'm speaking for myself, it seems to me that that's the situation we have here. The agency says in the fuel burn study that the emissions are going to be decreased. And by the way, we have this presumed to conform thing. If the presumed to conform thing is wrong, as you claim, wouldn't change the result. Therefore, your injury is not redressable by a court order.
Well, there are two answers to that. The fuel burn analysis is not in the record of this case. It's not at issue here. It's not to be adjudicated
here.
Assume it's correct then, since it's not challenged in this litigation.
And the second item is that even...
That's not a problem. That's a strike against you.
Yeah,
I understand that.
If it's not before us in this case and it's an alternate ground, then it's pretty obvious that your injury is not going to be redressed in this case.
This court must depend on the record in this case and its decision. And if there is no proof in the record that fuel burn analysis...
You haven't challenged the fuel burn study or the FAA's conclusions from it. So we have to assume those are valid. If they haven't been challenged, we have to assume they're valid. So what's your second point?
My first point hasn't been finished, but I will. And that is, since it is not in the record, and since this court is obligated to look to the record for the evidence, and since there's no evidence of the de minimis status created by the fuel burn analysis, I would say that it would be a broad leap of faith on the part of this court to assume that it is in fact going to render this project de minimis, number one. Number two,
that backward. If it's not before us, then we have to presume it's valid, don't we? And you have not challenged it in this case. You keep coming back to what's a problem to you and trying to assert it as a strength. I don't blame you, but it doesn't work.
The second reason is that this rule does not need to be applied in order to be justiciable here. There is damage from this distinct risk, and if it hasn't been applied yet, it's still as a substantive
rule. Is this a facial attack, you say?
It is indeed.
Well, then you run into a real problem, and the problem is Reno versus Flores. Are you familiar with that case?
We've read it.
Yeah, the Supreme Court held that in a facial attack on a regulation, you have to show that the regulation is invalid in every single possible application of the regulation. You can't show that.
Yes, we can. I believe we have,
Your
Honor.
As applied in a particular case, it might be perfectly valid. As applied in another case, it might be not. That depends on the particular underlying factual situation that the FAA is encountering. I mean, we can't predict all the possible applications, and neither can you, so you lose.
This court has said repeatedly that there are no exemptions or presumptions allowed under the Clean Air Act, that each project has to be, the conformity of each project has to be ascertained.
Now. You're going to merits now. We're still on standing in justiciability.
Well, we believe, and our briefs, we believe our briefs show that as governmental entities, qua governmental entities, the harm to those entities are the inability to enforce the laws because of the uncertainty caused.
When have they tried and been interfered with by this rule?
Oh, from the moment it was promulgated, Your Honor.
Tell me the first instance, that moment, what happened?
July 31st.
What was it they tried to do and they couldn't because of this rule? That
issue a permit with regard to whether or not
which
that permit.
Which permit was
permit
it?
Permit in the county of Delaware for a land use action.
Given the record there that they were not able to issue a permit because of that?
I don't have the July 31st record before me. I can provide it to you in a supplemental, in a letter or a brief. But from the moment that this rule was promulgated, the county of Delaware was unable to ascertain whether or not its projects would comply with the SIP because it was unable to ascertain what the air quality impacts of the project would be in conjunction with their own impacts. So they were essentially hamstrung from that moment on. And it did not, there doesn't have to be an application of the rule in the ROD for the airspace redesign, because from that moment on and into the future, not just from that ROD, but into the future, they're going to be harmed continuously. And we only have to show a distinct risk of particularized injury. We don't have to show that it will actually occur. This court has taken that position on numerous occasions. In a procedural, this kind of challenge is twofold. It's substantive and facial. It's also procedural. We say that the FAA failed to perform the acts under 93.153 G1 and G2 that they were obligated to perform to put this rule into position. So we have taken both positions, and we have harm under both.
My problem is not, I don't mean to say it's not redressability, but it begins with the harm issue. And my understanding of the procedural cases is you have to show that the procedure that you're attacking affected your ability to resist a later substantive harm. Yes. So can you tell me, I take it that in the Las Vegas case, that was before order at issue here came out, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So you can't really say that the order that you are challenging today hurt you procedurally in the Las Vegas case because it wasn't issued at the time of the agency decision in the Las Vegas case.
Oh, yes, Your Honor.
Oh, yes, Your Honor, what?
We can charge that.
And how is that?
Because the harm that's caused, the act that we are challenging caused a rule that was not promulgated in accordance with the EPA's regulations and therefore into the future.
Yeah, but, well, into the future is a different issue. The only allegations of harm that I've seen here is your allegation that this rule affected the results in Philadelphia and Las Vegas. You have some other harm?
Yes.
What other harm?
The Philadelphia and Las Vegas rods are but one example of the harm that can be caused by this rule. Suppose the airspace redesigns, the distinct risk is that changes in operations out of airports change all the time.
But when you say airports, all of your parties here, at least the only thing I've seen in the briefs is mm-hmm. about the parties who are near the Philadelphia and the Las Vegas airport.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
All right. And your allegation is that this rule prevented you from making the kind of argument because of the presumptions, et cetera, that you would have been able to make or prevented you from being victorious in those cases?
No, sir.
Okay, so what is the procedural problem with the presumption?
The procedural problem is that under the EPA's own regulation, 93.153G1, the agency is supposed to be able to establish conformity in generally the same ways required by the Clean Air Act. That is to show...
I understand the merits question. I want to know how it hurts you.
It hurts because from the moment it was implemented, the city of Las Vegas, for example, has the same problem as Delaware County. It can't make any determinations or decisions with regard to its land use planning because it cannot know if it's going to be complying with the SIP, the state implementation plan.
Doesn't the rule say that it does comply with the SIP, that these changes are presumed to comply with the SIP?
The changes themselves are presumed but are not enacted. You asked about the procedural problems. If they're not enacted in accordance with the procedures, they didn't meet G2 either. And in other words, they have no basis for making that determination, so we can't know if it...
I guess I'm not understanding this. So your challenge is not really procedural. Your challenge is not that there were certain kinds of filings of information that should have been made, that didn't have to be made because of the presumption. That's the classic procedural argument. You're not making that argument
at
all?
No, sir.
Okay. So what exactly is your procedural argument?
That in the promulgation of the rule, the FAA did not comport with the specific requirements of the EPA's rule 93.153.
How is that procedural? But what if you said it doesn't comply with the Constitution of the United States? Would that be regarded as procedural?
No, sir.
So what is procedural about the failure to comply with?
What's the procedural safeguard that you're not getting?
They
what
didn't.
What about the other procedural standing cases that involve some protection that the party says should be afforded to prevent them incurring some risk that they now incur or degree of risk? What is the safeguard you didn't get here?
The EPA's rule requires that the agency do one of two things. Under G1, it has to actually establish by independent studies that the rule activity that's presumed to conform will in fact conform. In other words, do a conformity applicability analysis. The FAA concedes that it did not rely on G1. It goes to G2. That requires a similar action, but that it be established by similar actions taken in recent years.
Okay, so you didn't get the information about these similar actions. That's your procedural harm,
that's correct.
Right? All right.
That's correct.
All right. That's what I thought your procedural harm was. So I'm looking at the FEIS that we're talking about with respect to Philadelphia. That's at JA-27. It's supplemental appendix. It refers to the draft notice. Where is there a reference to a final notice?
It's in the ROD, Your Honor, on pages, corrected ROD, pages 43 and 44.
And what page of our appendix is that?
Your Honor, I plead guilty. I don't know.
I want to ask, because your case depends on this, so.
Your Honor, if I could ask this court's indulgence, and we will provide it to you this afternoon in a letter brief. We don't have the appendix.
No, I don't want it in a letter brief. I want to talk about it because my recollection is that it does not discuss a final rule. And if it doesn't discuss the final rule, then the only thing that you were harmed by was the draft rule. And if you were only harmed by the draft rule, we can't consider it because a draft rule as a draft is not an order as to which we have jurisdiction. Only a final rule is.
Your Honor, it is our position that a draft rule has no force and effect of law.
Right.
It does
exactly.
not become. But right. the problem is that once the FAA took the position on pages 43 and 44 of the corrected ROD, which we will provide to you in the appendix citation too, it relied on a presumption which could only come to existence by a final rule.
It uses the word presumption. Is that your answer?
It does.
Okay. Do you have further questions?
I don't, but you're sure you can't tell me where in the joint appendix while you have your last chance to talk to us? I mean, your colleagues are looking in the wrong books.
I know that. I'm
aware. Well, look in either the supplemental appendix or the deferred appendix for the page you're talking about.
We'll do that. I have 3 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Well, we don't do it that way in this circuit. We give you a block of time. You may try to keep 3 minutes for rebuttal. You have used all your time. Now, we might give you some back for rebuttal. But I know a lot of other courts of appeal do let you save the time. If the court uses more, you still have what you save. But we don't do it that way.
Okay.
We may give you some back for rebuttal, but that's in our grace in this circuit. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Lane McFadden. I represent the United States and all the respondents in this proceeding.
I'm going to do to you what I did to the previous counsel, so you'll be able to take it.
Maybe
just
you'll
as
do
well.
It
yeah. and not to in this case, but in the previous case. So I want to know whether or not the FAA relied either in Las Vegas or in Philadelphia on the rule that is being challenged in this case.
In Las Vegas, it did not.
Okay.
Certainly.
All right. Now, and that's because it wasn't out yet.
It wasn't out yet.
Right. Now, what about in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia, it was out, and it is discussed in the ROD. It's in our supplemental deferred appendix at page 34. It's actually the discussion starts a page before that, but this is sort of the conclusion.
It was not relied on in the FEIS, though, right?
That's correct.
At that point, it was a draft.
That's right.
All right. Now, where are we?
In the FEIS at page...
At 27.
27 and 28, yes,
right.
Your
now,
Honor.
Where in the ROD?
The ROD supplemental appendix, page 34 and 35, is sort of the concluding statement there about this section.
Can you tell me where I should look?
Yes, Your Honor. We'll have to walk through a little bit, but based on the EIS and the clarification in the footnote below, which begins the last paragraph that runs to the next page, the beginning of that paragraph.
Based upon the EIS, which relied on the draft.
Which relied on the draft and the fuel burn analysis.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not interested in the fuel burn analysis.
Sorry,
because they're not challenging that. We don't have jurisdiction over that.
Right.
We only have a jurisdiction over a final order.
Right.
So far we've got based upon the EIS. That's not what we're talking about. So go ahead.
Right. Although that is an important explanation based on the EIS and the clarification in the footnote below regarding regional significance.
Right. Neither of which is the order that's under appeal.
Correct.
Yeah.
Proposed airspace redesign alternatives and the selected project are either exempt or presumed to conform under the general conformity rule.
Right. Based on the EIS,
correct,
which was based on a draft,
correct,
and the clarification below,
right, which they don't challenge directly.
Right. Based on these, it's either exempt or presumed. So
correct.
Basically, you're still relying on the draft.
Yes, in part.
In the draft, in part. But my question is there any place where you're relying on the final rule?
And the answer is no.
Well, that's what I asked you when we started, and you said the answer was yes, and that surprised me.
Okay.
Both because it hurts your case.
Right. Well,
and because it's not true.
Sorry, you want to reconsider that? Yes, I do want to reconsider that. Yes. We did rely on the final in the record of decision. It does discuss prior to the sentence I just read you, there's discussion of the development of the draft and then the final rule. The paragraph on the top of page 34 that starts the beginning page concludes with, after discussions with EPA staff, FAA deemed it prudent to include the activities described in the preamble to the general conformity rule as a presumed to conform action in the final notice that FAA published in the Federal Register. That's the exclusive discussion of the final rule.
It doesn't say you're relying on it.
It does not say that explicitly.
Right. So when you defend this case in the Philadelphia challenge, are you relying on the final rule for anything other than its persuasive value as compared to the fact that it was if the rule was good and final at the time the agency acted, it can rely on it.
Right.
If it was good and final afterwards, the agency cannot rely it under Chenery, among other things. It wasn't the basis of
that's right.
Are you relying on the rule in the Philadelphia challenge?
Yes, in part.
And how can you rely on a final rule in that challenge when the rule was not something you relied on when the agency acted?
Well, the agency action is considered to commence at the publication of the record of decision.
Yes, but the record of decision doesn't mention this rule, except to note that it's there, but it doesn't say you relied on it. It says you relied on, it says based upon the EIS and the clarification in the footnote below. It doesn't say based upon the final rule.
That's true. That sentence then ends, it is either exempt or presumed to conform under the general conformity rule. Yes. And
the
that means
conformity rule is
the EPA's regulation.
The EPA's rule,
that's
which
correct.
Of course is final.
Right. The sentence is supposed to mean that the two bases for the decision were the fact that it was de minimis as demonstrated by the fuel burn analysis, which is discussed, which would make it exempt, or it is presumed to conform under the final rule, which is discussed. And the FEIS, of course, doesn't discuss the final rule. It discusses the draft rule and talks about the documentation submitted for the draft. And then that didn't change by the time the promulgation of the final rule came around. I apologize for the lack of clarity in this, but that's what that is supposed to indicate in the record of decision.
Okay.
Those are the two grounds.
Thank you.
Given that, there aren't any federal actions pointed to by the petitioners which directly harm them in a way that they can claim stems from the presumed to conform list. As Your Honor's pointed out, redressability is just precisely the problem here.
If they had just brought this action and were not attacking the Philadelphia plan anywhere else, even if we struck down the presumed to conform rule, it wouldn't change their status in life any at that point. I mean,
you're exactly right. Nothing would happen to them.
Right.
And nothing happened to them at the date at which the presumed to conform list was finally promulgated.
I think we have your point, unless my colleagues have further questions. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Okay, anything you need to rebut? Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes.
One minute, 2 minutes. First of all, it escapes us how we can construe reliance on a rule that didn't exist when, in fact, the only way a presumption of conformity could be relied upon in the approval of a project, which was applied, an example of application. The only way is if that rule actually existed, not merely in draft, but in final.
I hate to say this, but each side here is arguing against your own interests. I guess I'm not understanding this at all. If they couldn't rely on it at all, you've got a great argument when they try to rely on it in another court before another panel. Right now, if your point is they couldn't rely on it, then you don't have any argument about causation here.
In our view, the Rod's statement that it relied on exemptions and presumptions must refer to the final rule, because how could an agency, I'm not asking this is a rhetorical question, how could an agency
I'm certainly not answering.
Depend on a draft? If that were true, then every federal agency could take actions on draft environmental impact statements, on draft rules, and say that's fine. And, Your Honors, I don't believe your cases or the Clean Air Act in this case envisioned such a temporary fix. This was a final action relied upon. It was permanent, and our clients were severely harmed at that moment in their capacities as governmental entities. And I thank Your Honors for the time.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. We're going to take a brief recess.